This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
This is Danny and Dusty.
What in God's name is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
With Danny Murray and Dusty, the Fan Man Hera.
What ruckus? I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app.
Describe the ruckus, sir.
And 1080.
Don't mess with the bull, young man. You'll get the horns.
The Fan.
Hour number two, Danny and Dusty with you on this Tuesday afternoon. Thank you for being a part of our day, letting us be a part of yours, whether it's on 1080 AM, 99.5 HD2, the Odyssey app, YouTube.com/1080AM The Fan, or Twitch.tv/1080AM The Fan. Party on, party animals. Dwayne Hankins, the president of business operations for the Portland Trail Blazers, is going to join us a half hour from right meow to talk about the big decision, the landmark decision here in Rip City to take the Blazers off of cable, off a regional sports network, and back to local television. An agreement with K2 unveiled last night after the Washington Commanders beat down of the Bengals on Monday Night Foosball. Game was awesome. I love that game. It was such a good game. Score wasn't indicative of how close it was. That game rocked.
No, I mean, you two quarterbacks just absolutely locked in.
I loved all of it. The other Monday night game last night.
You had one quarterback locked in. Holy crap.
Was not as good. And it
were,
was
were,
the,
any, were any records set here? We had plenty of records set by Jaden Daniels. Were any records for futility set here by the Jaguars?
I mean, none in futility. There was a record set by the Buffalo Bills with a 31-point halftime lead.
Oof.
It tied for the largest lead at halftime in Bills history. How about that?
Jeez.
You did have a career high for Josh Allen, who connected with 10 different receivers catching a ball yesterday.
I think the addition by subtraction of Stephon Diggs, we wondered what this was going to be. And through 3 weeks, this has been the MO, is that the ball is getting put all over the place and it's going to different guys. And it's Josh Allen is the conductor of this train, but everyone is just seemingly falling in line and falling into place behind him. It's so stupid to say this in week three, but this has like that Team of Destiny type stuff feel to it with the way that they're playing. Maybe they're just playing better than everybody else early in the season. Maybe they just came together sooner. And we've seen that plenty of times.
Yes. And look, their schedule has kind of broke their way as well. You get the Cardinals to open up with. Mm-hmm. That was a tough game in Orchard Park at home. And we're finding out the Cardinals are not a bad football team this year. But then Tua gets hurt again in the Miami game.
To be fair, they were handling the Dolphins.
All of a sudden, that game went sideways, and the Jags just suck.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to find out over the next couple of weeks, because they hit the Ravens and the Texans on both those games on the road. They hit the road for those games. But I think what we're finding is, you know, it's Josh Allen right now is playing out of his mind. And I think Joe Brady, as a play caller, this fits stylistically him more than trying to feed and having to feed a guy like Stephon Diggs over and over again. Because we think of, he was that wunderkind at LSU, right? Mm-hmm. Remember, he was cutting up film for Sean Payton in New Orleans. And then Ed Orgeron was like, hey, I need to learn RPOs. And they're like, I got a guy for you.
Yeah.
And Joe Brady came to LSU and they're like, yeah, you're our offensive coordinator. Think about that offense, though. They had Ja'Marr Chase. They had Justin Jefferson. They had, you know, Thaddeus Moss. They had weapons galore. Joe Burrow was your quarterback. And what it was, all right, we have the best receivers in all of college football. Joe, you don't have to lock on to one. You don't have to feed Ja'Marr. You don't have to feed Justin.
Everybody
you can just get the ball out to whoever's open. And we're seeing how wide open this offense is now that Josh Allen isn't having to force the ball to somebody else. It brought me back to, you know, training camp when Josh Allen was asked about Stephon Diggs. And I thought his answer was really telling. And this was in training camp.
Steph's a great player, and what he brought to this team was special. So miss is I don't know if I'd say miss. You know, he was a guy that was reliable. You can look to. He's going to have the juice each and every day. I'm sure he's bringing it over there in Houston. So definitely, yeah, you can't say that you don't miss that. But I am very happy with what we got going on here and how hard the guys have been working. And it's no secret, you know, Steph was an all-pro here, and he's got the stats to back it up. You know, each year he had 100-plus catches and 1,000-plus yards, and that's a heavy workload for someone to come and fill those shoes.
That was in training camp. Last night, after completing a ball to 10 different receivers, 6 to Khalil Shakir, who he absolutely loves, finding Keon Coleman for a touchdown, the rookie receiver out of Florida State, finally getting Coleman on the board with a touchdown. This was Josh Allen after the game in what may seem like a little bit of a shot at old Stephon Diggs.
Fun and wonderful thing when you got a bunch of guys that don't care about the stats, they don't care about the touchdowns. And again, I think throughout practice, we've just had this mindset of like, hey, let's just do things the right way and find ways to win football games. That's what we're doing right now.
I don't think that's kind of. That's pew, 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 pew.
Josh Allen is playing quarterback better than anyone in the NFL right now.
That
includes Patrick Mahomes.
Yes. He is okay, as far as a week three MVP could go, this you could not have three better weeks than he's had.
It is only 3 weeks, though.
But it has been 3 weeks of dominance.
And that doesn't mean he's the best quarterback in the NFL. That's still Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. But through the first 3 weeks, Josh Allen has been playing that position at the highest level of anybody else.
Yes.
And one thing that is, I think, to Allen's point there, and you don't have to force the ball to one guy. You don't have to worry about somebody getting targets. I think what has made Josh Allen so good is he is so much more careful with the football without taking away any of his explosiveness, right? Because he always used to have those just wickedly dumb throws where you're like, what are you doing, man? He doesn't have those.
No.
He does, and we talked about this with Jayden Daniels, the turnover-worthy throws,
yes,
whatever, where you're throwing into traffic. It's like, not
when,
a good
when
throw.
When you're Jayden Daniels and Josh Allen, you have an arm like that, you think you can make literally every throw.
But what he is doing now is you're sitting there watching a guy just take what the defense is giving him, and he is more careful with it, but he still is, all right, if you're going to take everything away, I'll tuck and run, and you will not deny me running the football because he's still a freight train with his legs. It's so fun to watch him play right now because he does look loose and free. And like he said, it looks fun.
Are we seeing kind of a revival of the Steve Young 49ers West Coast offense in the NFL?
No, not the West Coast. I mean, are you talking about the ability to run the football as your quarterback?
Yeah, I'm saying just like we're not seeing the big plays. You're having to march down. You're taking what guys give you. The tight end value is going up exponentially. The underneath and middle of the field is significantly more valuable. It's not. I'm not saying it's the exact same thing. I'm saying a lot of the same components of early '90s era West Coast offense.
I think you are seeing it because it's not in the middle of the field; it's outside. Like remember the chart of Aaron Rodgers only to one side. Mm-hmm. We saw it with Jayden Daniels last night. It is because the West Coast offense was, and conceptually, it's way different from what we see now. But what you are seeing is your extension of the run game is that short passing game that we are seeing being more prolific through the first 3 weeks of the season. And you're not going to see quarterbacks run this way all season long because you just can't do it. Because Steve Young always got hurt.
Yeah. Remember, he piled up concussions. But I do find it interesting, and I think Jaden Daniels and Josh Allen are obviously very different athletes. Josh Allen is an absolute tank. He's the closest thing outside of Anthony Richardson to Cam Newton. I mean, just an absolute, you know, 6'5", 6'6", 260 pounds.
He's
just
a unit.
Just absolute, and he seeks out contact. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Jaden Daniels is built like Lamar. Like, you just spindly. But I think they've both done with the exception of Josh Allen going like full helicopter dive. Was that week one or week two when he dove into the end zone?
Week one. Against the Cardinals.
Yeah. With the exception of the John Elway helicopter dive, he has done a better job of like not seeking out those hits. And I think whether it's Lamar, whether it's Jaden, whether it's Josh, whether it's Kyler, whether it's Caleb, Bo's talking and running
the ball a lot. Yeah, you are seeing quarterbacks run the ball a lot more. Mm-hmm. And I think they're doing that now to force teams to adjust too.
Start walking somebody up or spying or keeping somebody close to the line of scrimmage, which opens up the plays on the back end.
Yep, and hopefully we do. But scoring was up. I mentioned this yesterday.
Big time scoring last night for three of the four teams.
Yeah, still not getting it out of the Jags. 68 offensive touchdowns were scored in week three from Thursday night through Sunday's action. There were only 57 all of week number two. And you saw last night, what was it? You had four touchdowns from the Bengals. You had one, two, three, four, five from the... So you had nine right there in that game alone. And then you had one from the Jags. So we're up to 10. All right. Hey, 16 more touchdowns to add to that total. That's a nice little day. 86 touchdowns on the weekend for the National Football League. It looked a little bit more like we had offense back in the NFL for week number three. So we'll see. And I mentioned this last week, too. I think a big part of all of that was it was going to take some time for offensive coordinators and quarterbacks to adjust to the way that teams are playing defensively in the NFL. And Thursday night was that good indicator of how teams were adjusting. And you saw that copycat effect throughout Sunday and then Monday night with the two games. Offenses are smart. Defensive coordinators are really smart, too. But offenses have adjusted, and we'll see how much I can carry over because it does take precision to end up scoring a bunch of points. But you saw the quarterbacks that are locked in this past week, they were scoring points in bunches, man. And that was really fun to watch. Yeah. Really fun to watch.
Look, I love a good slobber knocker as much as anybody else, but most people want to see points put up. Yeah. And when you see two prolific quarterbacks, three really last night, and when the unfortunate thing is it should have been four. And where and what Trevor Lawrence is right now, you know, some people are blaming Doug Peterson. Some people are blaming Trevor Lawrence. Some people are blaming the personnel around him. But I don't know what the hell's going on with him.
They're in a tough spot. And this is kind of, remember, Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl and got fired. Not that year, a year later.
Yeah.
Ended up getting fired. And we saw what happened when they got new offensive minds come in. Shane Steichen did an amazing job under Nick Sirianni in kind of revitalizing the offense. You kind of seen the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
Trevor Lawrence looks like he's freezing. Doug Peterson looks like he's grasping for straws right now.
It doesn't look like there's a lot of answers right now.
I mean, it was better for a brief period after the Urban Meyer experience in Jacksonville.
I mean,
but now you're starting to see there are warts right there. There's warts there.
It's just a weird spot to be in.
Yeah. Kyle Long with a great tweet. Josh Allen playing football in the NFL looks like Danny Almonte playing in Little League World Series. He kind of has that feel about him. Like,
just bigger than everyone else.
Just bigger, stronger, more developed. Yeah. Just that guy right now. He is playing out of his gourd.
He's got a Superman kind of deal going for him right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Unlike the Dallas defense where Micah Parsons says everybody's just trying to be Superman. Mm. We don't need Superman. We need guys to do their own job.
I mean, yeah, that would be mildly helpful for them. Yeah. Although him being good again would be helpful for them, too.
Hey, Dwayne Hankins will join us, the president of business ops for the Portland Trailblazers coming up at 1:30. But next, let's take a look at, well, we got two paths we can go down here.
Hmm.
And both of them are Portland related.
Oh.
Yeah. We got big news here locally. We got the Portland Diamond Project and the Pac-12 now back in court. You know, let's go Pac-12 in court.
Okay.
Let's go Pac-12 in court because we started our show with breaking news that was more of a stinky little fizzle out fart.
Yeah, the 12 hours after we talked about that to the end of last night.
Brett McMurphy's sticking to his guns, though.
But, I mean, the amount of things that transpired in that 12-hour period was insane.
Yeah. When you can't win, litigate next on The Fan.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things, like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
All right. Pac-12, not in a great spot right now. I think I talked to a lot of Oregon State fans that were convinced it was the Big 12. Some said, if it's not the Big 12, it's going to be the ACC. Well, what we have seen over the last couple of weeks is it's Pac-12 is rebuilding with the Mountain West. And yesterday we talked about how Tulane, Memphis, and Texas San Antonio had said, thanks but no thanks. We're going to stick to the conferences that we are in right now. We are going to stick to the American Athletic Conference. We're not going to go anywhere else. Immediately, Brett McMurphy from the Action Network said Gonzaga is coming over from the West Coast Conference to be a basketball-only member or non-football member, and they'll get a full revenue share. That was kicked down pretty quickly. Then everybody said, all right, well, now where does the Pac-12 go? UNLV! UNLV said, no, we're sticking here in the Mountain West for now. It ended up being Utah State.
We talked about that yesterday about, you know, where else would they go as a potential, and that was the one that you landed on.
Yep.
Decent,
and it's a state school, too.
Yeah, and I still think you're going to keeps it going. I still think UNLV ends up in this mix. They originally said, we're cool, but the second Utah State left, it looked just like the Pac-12 when it fell apart the first time.
Yep.
When everybody went, oh no, we're committed to each other. And meanwhile, they're all making phone calls to everyone else going, okay, how do we save ourselves?
UNLV is playing the role of Arizona State.
Yes.
Right now.
Making somebody else be the bad guy.
They're waiting for the house to burn down. And then they're sitting right next to the door. And when everybody else gets out, they're going to slip out and say, hey, we were the last ones out, guys. We were there till the bitter end. And everybody's going to look around and go, no, you weren't.
You had your stuff packed.
Yeah. You
Why do you have a go bag?
You didn't help anybody. Like, you just sat next to the door and waited for everybody else to run out. You watched Oregon State and Washington State die, and then you just slipped out and said, deuces.
Stepped over their corpses on the way out.
Yeah, like, you're not a hero, but here we are right now, and that does seem to be the play for UNLV in the Mountain West, is that they're just going to sit there and take a look at everything and watch it all burn down and then slip out. Because, one, I don't think they want to pony up unnecessary money if they don't have to. No. And they're going to see how the lawsuit that was filed today by the Pac-12 plays out. Because the Pac-12 is suing the Mountain West Conference over the agreement that they signed a year ago, which was the poaching fee. right? We've talked at length about this. The poaching fee that the Pac-12 has to pay for any of the Mountain West schools that leave for the conference. As it stands right now, there are five universities that have withdrawn from the Mountain West, or with Utah State, plan to withdraw from the Mountain West and become members of the Pac-12. They are Boise State, Fresno State, Colorado State, San Diego State, and Utah State. There is part of this contract that they signed with the scheduling agreement between the Pac-12 and the Mountain West, there was a poaching fee that is an escalator. The first university is $10 million. After that, it grows in increments of $500,000. So now that you are up to five institutions, Utah State leaving, their withdrawal fee is now $12 million to withdraw from the Mountain West, which means the Pac-12 will have to pay the Mountain West, or the schools will have to pay the Mountain West $55 million.
That's a lot of cash.
Average of 11 mil per school to leave. Now, this might be why UNLV is waiting for this lawsuit and waiting for the house to burn down, is that if they leave, it'll be $12.5 million that they have, that's their fee. Mm-hmm. And the Pac-12's bill jumps up to $67.5 million for the poaching fee.
Do you, going full tinfoil hat, do you think that when the Pac agreed to this, they knew they were probably going to poach? And they,
I know 100% because it's lodged in the Ross Dellinger article that Washington State and Oregon State apparently said this isn't enforceable.
And that's what I think they maybe put some language in there that when they made the agreement that was like, what do you call it? Not necessarily toxic, but enough to sink the deal.
Yeah,
and poison pill.
Yeah, it's kind of a poison pill situation. I think that's exactly what Florida State and Clemson are doing in the ACC as well with their media rights deals, saying this isn't enforceable.
Well, here's the line in Ross Dellinger's article, who's the first to have this lawsuit. In its complaint, the Pac-12 asserts that the Mountain West imposed the poaching penalty on a disadvantaged and desperate conference attempting to find competition for hundreds of athletes at Oregon State and Washington State. The two schools acknowledged during negotiations that the penalty was unenforceable and illegal. So, yeah, I think that that's a safe assumption that they knew. They knew that this wasn't going to be the way that this went down. So here we are, and what they are saying is that basically this violates antitrust laws and competition and the ability for these universities to go out, make more money, and be on better footing. So
hilarious that the antitrust part of this was used for both the players and now the universities.
Yeah. I think what this is going to do is we are going to see this is going to end in a settlement where the Pac-12 is going to say, we're not paying this. The Mountain West is going to say, all right, well, how about you pay, you know, halvesies? And the Pac-12 is going to go, no. And they're going to say, well, what about a quarter? And then the Pac-12 is finally going to relent and go, all right, yeah, we'll give you a quarter of this. And you guys just go away. I think the Mountain West, if they don't win this lawsuit, and the Mountain West may just dig their heels in, because if they don't win this, Mountain West is dead.
Yeah.
Air Force goes to the AAC. UNLV ends up coming to the Pac-12. Hawaii is hosed. San Jose State is hosed. New Mexico and Wyoming are all hosed.
Like as bad a shape as Oregon State and Washington State are in, those other schools, those remaining schools, where do they go?
FCS or Conference USA's?
Like, I mean,
Maction. Love Mac.
I mean, you're basically taking whatever you can get at that point.
I also think there may be an element of this where this lawsuit, if you want to go, my tinfoil hat on all this.
Oh, tighten it up.
My tinfoil hat is the Pac-12 is trying to weaken agreements between universities and their conference for grant of rights stuff. And you set a precedent. And then the ACC lawsuit, Florida State and Clemson go, ha, see?
And it opens, one hand washes the other.
And maybe that allows for more dissolving of the ACC, and they're going to try to peel off some schools in that way. Again, they're suing over the poaching fee, but does the way that it is framed in that you are restricting these universities from their ability to go out and make money, is that then used in maybe the ACC lawsuits and say, hey, we're trying to do the same thing here. It may not be grant of rights, but it's a poaching fee. It was contractually agreed upon. It's not legal. It's unlawful. We're going to use that in our lawsuit. I don't know. I'm not.
I don't think the tinfoil is that tight there. And I mean, you can kind of read the tea leaves for how a lot of these cases are going to go, which is the antitrust portion of these. The NCAA has gotten absolutely hammered. Mm. I mean, so if you apply some of the same precedents, even if it's individual as opposed to university, I think that's exactly the course of action that these schools will try to take, or the lawyers for these schools will try to take, is go, hey, look, we've established a lot of precedent over the past 24 months, the last 36 months, as far as antitrust and the upward mobility of the economic ladder, and putting prohibitions or limitations on said growth is actually not enforceable. And I think that's
not a good.
I have felt basically from the jump, even before this with the Pac-12, that the ACC was going to lose to Florida State and Clemson. And I think one hand will wash the other in this sense, yeah. Whether Washington State went out over the poaching fee, or Florida State and Clemson went out ahead. I think one is going to help the other's case very specifically, and is kind of what you mentioned.
I think what we are seeing too, though, is the cold reality that is you may not be joining the Mountain West. The Mountain West is joining you. This is where I kind of landed on last summer. This is how it was going to play out for Oregon State and Washington State. Was I thought the Pac-12 was going to survive in name alone. And that's what it looks like right now. It's the Mountain West.
Yeah.
It is the Mountain West. But that doesn't mean you won't have a seat at the table if you win that conference, and you could go to a college football playoff still. All right. The president of business operations.
Indeed.
For the Portland Trail Blazers, Dwayne Hankins joins us next. Blazers on local television. It's coming to an agreement that was announced yesterday with K2. All your games going to be over the air. He joins us next. First is Rust with SportsCenter.
Joining us now, after the big news breaking last night, the Portland Trail Blazers have agreed to a multi-year deal with K2 and Sinclair Broadcasting Group, as well as the announcement of the direct-to-consumer platform Blazer Vision. President of Business Operations, Dwayne Hankins, joins the show, ladies and gentlemen. Dwayne, how you doing?
Hello, thanks for having me. How you doing, Danny?
I'm doing good, buddy. It's nice to have you on to be able to talk about something that you guys have been building towards for a while now. And mm-hmm. It's something that I think is probably one of the biggest wins for fan off the basketball court in quite some time. Can you kind of elaborate on how you got to this point, why K2, and what you guys are kind of hoping to accomplish by moving this direction, going to a more traditional but different model as broadcasting changes?
Yeah, I think, Danny, for us, it's really been about the fans from day one on this, and making sure our fans can watch the games. I mean, you've reported on it. Folks have talked about it. There's been a long history of our games being too hard to watch for too long. And, K2 came to the table with a really great opportunity for us, because not only is it in Portland, but this TV network, this Rip City TV network that we've been talking about, you know, it helps spread out through all of Oregon and Washington. And that was something that was really exciting for us, and just making the games available for our fans. We're in this period of the franchise where, you know, wins and losses are not going to be the primary reason why people come to games, but we want to be able to build that relationship with fans. We want fans to see glimpses of these players that they were really excited to go see. And this felt like the right time to do this.
You know, not a lot of teams in the NBA have this sort of agreement. We've seen it in Phoenix and hybrid version of it down in Utah with the Jazz. How receptive was the NBA to this in this plan? Because it has always seemed like everything has always been pushed to the cable and the regional sports networks, but now kind of that landscape is changing. How receptive was the NBA? Because you guys have Blazer Broadcasting in-house, making it a lot easier to start this thing from the ground floor.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think having the production in-house is something that we take a lot of pride in. We've always wanted to do that. That's something that goes back to when Paul Allen was still around and owning the team, and he felt very passionate that we should be able to produce and own our own broadcast. It makes all of our other content arms stronger. So I think because we do our broadcast, you know, our social media is better, our documentary series are better. So it just strengthens that muscle throughout. And so that was always going in. We knew we could find the right solution for us. you know, it's been years in the making in a lot of ways, because I think Danny alluded to this. You know, we've looked at direct to consumer models for years, trying to build towards this. And I think where the league has shifted in the last couple of years is that, you know, the ground underneath our feet on this regional sports network is affecting, you know, not just the NBA, but the entire sports industry. It's affecting college sports. And I think at the end of the day, most teams just want to create that lifelong opportunity to have fans who are able to watch the games. Like, at the end of the day, how many brands of products get a 2.5-hour commercial available to create more love for the team? And so we knew we had to go that direction.
Dwayne, we kind of opened it up to listeners for questions, and I want to make sure I ask you this one, because it's a very specific question. It's something you and I have talked about, and I alluded to in the article. You guys have a very broad distribution to begin with, but one of the hurdles that you guys are dealing with, and this isn't just you guys, it's a territorial thing as far as the broadcast itself, but how are you guys working to get customers and fans in Bend and Deschutes County as much coverage as they can get?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question, Danny. So, you know, a lot of the plane is built, but we're still kind of flying while we're putting it together. And what I mean by that is there is going to be only more distribution that opens up from here. We're working on Bend, both us and our partners in Sinclair, to find the right solution for our fans there. We hope to be able to get that up as soon as possible. We're working on a coverage in Spokane. So that's another area that's really important to us. And then we have fans in Eastern Oregon, you know, in the Boise market that we want to make sure are able to watch games. Because, you know, while the games were more difficult to watch last season than they are this season, those were markets that had access to those games. And so we want to make sure our fans have access to the games. So I guess my short answer would be stay tuned and stay, you know, stay with us, and we'll give you news as we get it.
How mobile is it going to be for the Blazer Vision? I've had friends that have already reached out for me across the country saying, hey, is this going to make it easier for me to get the Blazers through the Blazer Vision? What is going to be the streaming arm of this, and how does that look from a standpoint of accessibility in kind of the geofencing and where it is at a price point for fans?
Yeah, you know, we're partnering with the NBA, who we trust a lot in this product. They do a great job with League Pass, so it's going to be backed by the same software. We wanted to make as many options as fans for possible. So we know that fans who have antennas or watch the games over the air, great. But there's a lot of fans who don't have a TV or want to watch on their mobile device. And so that's really what Blazer Vision is for. It's designed for the fan on the go, for the fan who wants to watch on those platforms in the way they want to watch. You know, it's all under the same sort of geofencing rules that anything would be. But again, the idea is to make it as fan friendly as possible. And that's what we put into the pricing as well. I mean, we wanted to create a product that was relatively inexpensive for the fans to be able to access the game. So we think $120 for the year and $19.99 a month is the right deal. And it comes with two tickets for the season. So we think that's a good deal for fans.
One of the things, Dwayne, that you know, the organization has really kind of pushed, and I think K2 and Sinclair along the same lines, is you want to support not just the broadcast itself, but have shoulder programming and have additional insights and have, you know, the things you can do with your media and your social media staffs and the things that kind of come along with that. Can you speak about the different options and things that you guys are at least looking at early and where you guys can go with that in the future?
Yeah, definitely. With NBC Sports Northwest, what was great about the partnership with them was that, you know, we had that shoulder programming sort of all day talking Blazers. And that was obviously something that we missed when we went over to Root. Now, when in Root Sports, who was also a great partner, you know, it was distribution. It was, we would be with these two other teams and we would be able to get distribution. Obviously, that didn't work out exactly as planned. We don't have to get into that. But for us, it was about what we missed from that relationship was being able to have a ton of shoulder programming that helped support our Blazer games. So what opens up the possibilities here with the Rip City TV network is to be able to have things like the trail in a much bigger audience. We can do things like coaches shows. We can do shoulder programming like you're talking about, pre-game shows or post-game shows. And, you know, one thing we know about our fans is there's no shortage of content that they want to be able to to check out and to watch.
So we, now one thing with a route where it was like you were either on the main channel or the secondary channel, this going to have kind of the same deal with K2 and then Rip City TV. How far in advance are we going to know which games are on which station? Are we going to know this like right away? Because that was one of the things that, you know, fans were like, I don't know. I didn't know if it was on 1253 on Comcast or 734. Are we going to know exactly where games are going to be far in advance and in what whether they're going to be on channel 2 or dot 2?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of training that we're going to have to do with our fans to help them understand and find the games on these networks. So, again, as we're building through this, most of the games for the fall here are going to be on that 2.2, the K2 channel. There'll be the occasional game on K2 2.1, which is really getting in the weeds. But what that means is that the games are, you know, they'll be available there and we'll get the word out as much as we can. Starting on January 1st, there's another station here in the market that's the Univision station, and then that station will completely flip over to be a Blazers only, you know, Rip City TV network station, and that's really where it's going to be, incredibly available. So we have a little bit of a transition period here, but the games will be available on January 1st, both on K2 on that 2.2, and then on this new station that we're launching January 1st.
There was some. I don't know, mostly miscommunication or misunderstanding of, I think, the level or quality of the broadcast that has since been clarified, and that is the broadcast on the K2 Charge channel is currently in 480, but it will switch over to 1080 in the Portland market October 22nd, obviously the day before the regular season starts. And that'll at least cover that market with the at least above standard definition broadcast, correct?
Yeah, and I'll correct that even further, which is to say we want it to be HD before our preseason games broadcast. So we are definitely doing the preseason game on the 18th. We may look at doing another preseason game just because as we look through the schedule here, it'd be nice, making no promises here, but it'd be nice to have a couple of preseason games under our fans' belts to be able to watch these games. And those games need to be in HD. I mean, it's that's just the way it has to be. So we're working on that with K2 and the Sinclair Network. But yeah, there's no way in 2024 we cannot have a game in 1080p.
And that was the question I was just going to ask you was do you know how many games and which games that will be covered on the broadcast for the preseason yet?
Definitely the game on the 18th. Maybe I'm breaking news here. And then we're looking at another option, but don't have anything yet.
Okay.
I'm pumped to have it back on like local television because I remember growing up here in the area, you know, we got to watch games on KGW growing up and it was always kind of that appointment television. It was something that everybody had and it was accessible to and I loved it. What has been the reaction to the fan base that you guys have gotten initially? Because I'm pumped about just having it to where everybody in the area can watch a game as long as you have a television and HD antenna.
Yeah, I mean, the fan base seems really excited, which we're happy with. That ultimately was the goal. I think the things that keep me up at night are twofold. One of them is just there's so many different things that can take people's mind and attention. And so we need to be in the space of getting your attention, and that means making the games easy and available to find. And that's what we've done. And then the second one is, it's just, you know, youth sports and having kids watch the games and grow up and watch the games. I mentioned this the other day, but a lot of my love for sports growing up myself in Chicago is being able to watch, you know, the Bulls or the White Sox or the Cubs on WGN and building that love from a very early age. So, you know, I hope this means we'll go back to the days where, you know, families can sit in front of a TV or watch on an iPad or whatever, but just have access to the games. I think that part's really important to us. And, you know, you alluded to the KGW days, another great partner of ours, but our games were often twice the rating of our cable games on KGW. And so, you know, as it's no secret that we had the biggest drop in TV ratings last year, and primarily the reason for that was our games were so much harder to watch. So we're really looking at the numbers this year and hoping to see a major bounce back there.
You may have grown up in Chicago watching the Cubs on WGN, but there's like a whole...
We grew up watching
the entire
Cubs.
Portland area is like littered with Cubs and Braves fans because of WGN and TBS.
Yeah. I mean, again, that's the power of being able to watch the broadcast. Yeah. It's a great example.
Well, hey, Dwayne, thank you for taking the time for us, man. We really appreciate it. Congrats on the new deal. Like I said, I think this is a major win for Blazers fan, and I know how hard you and the folks at the Trailblazers worked to get this done. So break a little bit of journalistic integrity and say thank you, not having to fight through to watch games, I think, is going to be a big deal for fans. So thank you for that.
Yeah, and thanks for having me on, guys.
Hey, thanks, Dwayne. Again, that was the Portland Trailblazers President of Business Operations, Dwayne Hankins, joining us here live after the Portland Trailblazers have launched their new TV network, Rip City Television, in partnership with K2 and Blazer Vision, their direct consumer streaming platform.
Blazer fans will always have something to complain about.
Yes.
I asked him about the K2 versus .2 because we are going to have to retrain ourselves. And I'm glad he said that. Like, we're going to have our training wheels on for a little bit, but I think the one thing that you can kind of lean on, and he said it right there, is that January 1st, so midway through the first season, actually like a third of the way through the season, all of a sudden that Univision will flip to Rip City Television, and that is where you can get all of it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Is
all of it will be in one spot eventually. Yeah. We're going to have to learn for a while.
This
is better than the alternative.
Yeah, there's a technical hang-up that is causing this issue, and that's... And Dwayne addressed that there, and that Univision will hold that antenna until the end of the calendar year.
You know what? This is what pissed me off about Root so much, is that I would like go because life, coaching like youth sports, mm-hmm. having kids playing sports, a regular season game, I would just like DVR, right?
Sure.
You put it on the DVR. Yeah. I would DVR a Blazer game, and I'd turn it on, and it's cracking. Like the Kraken studio show, and then like the following
pregame,
the Kraken. And I'm like, this is not the Blazers. Yeah. And I would go through and I would record the wrong game because it would come up on the guide as like on 7:34. The game was actually on 12:53. And I would just be like, sweet, no game. Awesome. Looks like I'm going to YouTube for the condensed version.
Yeah, we're going to see if we can find the shortcut for this for League Pass. So, like I said, Dwayne addressed, and a lot of people, again, have asked about the band issue. And I will tell you, and Dwayne just highlighted it, they are very aware of where they need to do things to kind of raise it up a bit. And those are hurdles that exist before the Blazers.
Yeah, I mean, and like I said earlier, and I mean it, at least you now can be informed when you're complaining about the Blazers sucking, because a lot of you didn't watch. You just saw box scores and you said, bah, this sucks. Well, now you can watch every game and you can actually be upset.
This is actually
probably going to trigger Danny even more.
No.
Because they're going to be like, I did watch. And then you're going to be like, well, you watched and you're wrong? Yeah. Still?
No, I told Dwayne and I said it here. Like, I think this is a huge, huge win. And knowing the process and what they went through and how this has all gone and where they ended up versus what was available and the other things that they looked at. And I think they ended up at the best possible outcome for Blazers fans. Like that, and I think that matters. And
no doubt.
I don't know if you guys can pick it up from Dwayne, but Dwayne gives a damn.
Yeah, he does.
Like he's not some C-suite jerk who's just trying to cash checks. Like he genuinely cares about fans, and like this, he wasn't joking. This kept him up at night trying to get this deal right. Yeah. So I want to give him his credit for how hard that he worked to get this done.
Okay, different ownership groups, different television deals. Could we see some of the W games on there?
I did talk to Dean Dittmer, who's the vice president and general manager at K2, as part of the interview for my article that's on the Jack Ramsey's Patreon. And I would be shocked if K2 did not put their hat in the ring for the WNBA franchise when it comes around.
Because that's a question that Dwayne is not responsible for.
No, 100%.
Because it's a different ownership group. That's not even the same arm. It's a different animal. Yeah.
Do I think it could exist on the same network? Absolutely.
Because they need programming for Rip City Television during the summer, too.
100%. And I think you could maybe end up seeing the Thorns on that. Like, I think you could end up seeing it become a kind of a localized RSN of sorts.
All right.
So, but yeah, networks in markets now, And we talked about this yesterday, the idea. No, I'm sorry. It was Casey and I talked about this last night. The idea of broadcasting, the number one thing, the number one revenue generator is live event. Live event. That is why it's valuable. That's what matters. That is the number one driver of income right now in broadcasting.
Awesome.
So coming next, you want to give us a little bit of a duck report?
We have, yeah, we got plenty of stuff. I'll be down there tomorrow, but there's a lot going on here.
There's plenty of stuff to dive into. We'll get a little duck port ahead of the Ducks taking on UCLA coming up this weekend here on Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan. The Oregon Ducks are back off their bye week.
Yeah, buddy.
But unfortunately, they've got some negative stuff to talk about.
Yeah, Dan Lanning had his press conference last night, as he does customarily every Monday night, and he gave the update to offensive lineman Matthew Bedford.
Yeah, he actually got dinged the other day in practice, so just trying to be aware of where he's at. If he's able to help us this week, we will. But always we'll put our players first and see where they're at in that process.
Ooh, Matt Bedford, injured again, knee injury, Indiana transfer. A lot of folks just thought that he would slide in, start at the right guard position where he played at Indiana, was an all Big Ten performer as a junior. And I understand depth is very important, but there's just something in my mind that goes, the silver bullet isn't going to be for him just to slide in and everything's going to be okay, right? Because where did the big change come with how this offensive line was operating, right? It was Ponchalolu moving from right guard to center. But then it wasn't just as easy as putting Nashad Strother in at right guard, right? They moved Marcus Harper from the left side to the right side and working alongside of Johnny Cornelius. And then Nashad Strother working alongside Josh Connerly, it works a lot better. Depth is going to be important. But the way that this O-line group has been working through the last six quarters that we've seen them, the second half of Boise State where they rushed for 93 yards and all of the negative plays that they had really in that half was not with that group on the field together. Oregon State, they go rush for 244 yards in that game with that group on the field. They are operating at a very high level. So they afford you a little bit of time and a little bit of ramp up. Bedford isn't just going to be the guy who fixes everything for you up front. I think they've started to figure some things out, but obviously the next step is just kind of stack things forward and move forward in that regard. The other thing that was great about this press conference,
mm-hmm.
he was asked about the 8 o'clock kick. Mm-hmm. Lanning was. This is fantastic.
What an opportunity. That means more time for us to prepare, more time for us to get ready. We're excited about the challenge and what that provides.
What an opportunity needs to be a drop. What an opportunity.
I love he's being an absolute heel there. You know, every ounce of his being is going, 8 o'clock? Are you kidding me? 8 o'clock? We're going to be done with this freaking game at 1 a.m? Are you kidding? You know.
Yeah, it's brutal, man.
8 o'clock is like, that's such an insane kick time.
Yeah.
When we heard that this could happen, like, was it 10 days ago, 12 days ago, whatever, we're like, oh, that window, it's going to be 8 o'clock.
Dude.
We all knew what it was going to happen.
Think about this. Like, you get an 8 o'clock game, right? 3.5 hours, we'll say, on the aggressive side, that game ends at 11:30, right?
It's ending at midnight.
You then have your post-game responsibilities. Guys get up the field at about 11:45 at that point. You go in. You have your media. Guys are going to get done with doing that around midnight.
Do some training.
Okay? Then you have to go and shower, change, eat, get on the bus. You're all probably on the bus at this point at 12:30, 12:45. You're getting to the airport right around 11:15-ish because you don't fly from the Rose Bowl. You go to, I think, Burbank. Probably is the closest. Yeah, 1:15-ish. You're getting to Burbank. You go through, and even on a chartered flight, you're probably going through. Probably everybody's on the plane by 1:45. You're probably wheels up by 2. You're getting back to Eugene at about 4:30 in the morning. Think about that.
Yeah, like I say, there's no way in hell he's like, this is such an opportunity. He's sitting there going, I can't complain.
And then, oh, by the way.
Can't complain about this.
Oh, by the way, you play on Friday. the night against Michigan State. So everybody's got to be up back in the facility because you lose a day. So Sunday is now your Monday. Yeah. And so everything kind of gets condensed a little bit. So you.
Guys, what an opportunity.
What an opportunity.
I love that. He's like, hey, a little bit extra time to prepare. We're going to be ready to go. Yeah. Like, that's the way you have to approach it, right? Like, you have to be delusional and say that.
Yes, 100%.
But you know, like, they're just going, oh, my God.
Oh, when you've got the folks who help plan all this stuff out for the teams, they're sitting there looking at the schedules going, what the hell is this?
Yeah, man.
Like, even like you said, even like the most aggressive, even the most aggressive, like, we need to get out of here.
Yeah.
Is going to get you to the airport at like 1:15.
Yeah, that's like, great.
Best case scenario,
yeah,
your wheels up at 2.
I bet they're going to, if I'm them and I don't, every media member should just understand.
It's like it's short.
We are running up through the tunnel to the showers, getting on that bus as quickly as we can because we got to get home. Like there's going to be staffers that are working for Oregon that do not sleep. And they have to work through whether it's film breakdown, mm-hmm. getting cut-ups ready, getting meetings set, getting all that straight for Sunday. And then so everything is ready to go. It's wild, dude. 8 o'clock kick on the road. That's brutal, especially when you play on a Friday the following week.
Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great.
It's
great.
Funny, but it's great.
Yeah. I mean, what an opportunity. What an opportunity.
What an opportunity.
What an opportunity.
I mean, it's a great job. It's a great job. I love it. Absolutely love it. Speaking of opportunities, the Portland Diamond Project has apparently seized on an opportunity to pick up some land. Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. It's Tuesday. 3 up, 3 down. Coming up here next round, Danny Dusty, 10 FM.
I'll get it in.
What an opportunity.